Prabhupada, Paramahamsa, Parivrajakacharya, Stota Shatashishima, Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Jan Vishnupada, Paramahamsa, Parivrajakacharya, Stota Shatashishima, Divine Grace, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Goswami Maharaj Prabhupada Ki Jai. Ananta Goti Vaishnavrinda Ki Jai. Grantharaj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai. Yuga Dharma Harinam Sankirtan Ki Jai. Brihat Madanga Transcendental Book Distribution Ki Jai. Samaveda Bhaktivinoda Ki Jai. Gaura Premanandi. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the lotus feet of Sri Guru and Sri Gauranga. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Reading from Grantharaj Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 3, entitled The Status Quo, Chapter 10, Text 4. Maitre Uvacha.
Maitre Uvacha.
Parincho Pitatacha Kre. Devyam Varsha Shatam Tapaha. Atmanyatmanam avesha yataha bhagavannaja maitre uvacha tarincho pitata chakre devyam varsha shatam tapaha atmanyatmanam avesha Yathaha Bhagavanajaha Maitreya Uvacha Varincho Pitata Chakre Devyam Varsha Shatam Tapaha Atmanyatmanam Avesha Yathaha Bhagavanajaha. Please chant. To Jesus, please. Anybody else? word for word translation, Maitreya Uvacha. The great sage Maitreya said, Varinchaha Brahma Api also Tata in that manner Chakre performed Divyam celestial. Varshashatam 100 years Tapaha penances Atmani unto the Lord Atmanam his own self Avesha engaging Yataha as it was spoken Bhagavan the personality of Godhead Ajaha the unborn. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. The greatly learned sage Maitreya said, O Vidura, Brahma thus engaged himself in penances for 100 celestial years, as advised by the personality of Godhead, and applied himself in devotional service to the Lord. Purport. That Brahma engaged himself for the personality of Godhead, Narayan, means that he engaged himself in the service of the Lord. That is the highest penance one can perform for any number of years. There is no retirement from such service, which is eternal and ever encouraging. Om Gyanantim Indasya Gyananjana Shalakoya Chakshu Umilitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. I was born in the darkest ignorance. My spiritual master opened my eyes with torch-lighted knowledge. I offer my humble obeisances unto his lotus feet. Panchakalpa Duribhishtha Kripa Sinabhi Evacha Patitanam Bhavanibhyo Vaishnavimbhyo Namo Namaha. Hare Krishna. Chapter 10. It's entitled The Divisions of Creation. So I'll summarize the chapter so we can meditate on this divine chapter of the Srimad Bhagavatam in a sequence. So text one, Sri Vidura is asking Maitreya to please explain how Lord Brahma, who is the grandfather of the planetary inhabitants, created the bodies of living entities from his own body and mind after the disappearance of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So this is after Lord Brahma spoke to Vishnu. Vishnu disappeared from his sight. And so now Vidura is asking Maitreya, please explain to me how Brahma created the living entities. So now we're on text 4. And Maitreya is explaining, O Vidura, Brahma thus engaged himself in penances for 100 celestial years, as advised by the personality of Godhead, and applied himself in devotional service to the Lord. Thereafter, Brahma saw that both the lotus on which he was situated and the water on which the lotus was growing were trembling due to a strong, violent wind. You know, we can imagine this, picture it in our mind. Long penance and transcendental knowledge of self-realization had matured Brahma in practical knowledge, and thus he drank the wind completely along with the water. Lord Brahma drank the wind and the water. Thereafter he saw that the lotus on which he was situated was spread throughout the universe, and he contemplated how to create all the planets which were previously merged in that very same lotus. Thus engaged in the service of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord Brahma entered into the whirl of the lotus, and as it spread all over the universe, he divided it into 3 divisions of worlds, and later into 14 divisions. This may be hard to contemplate in our conditioned mind, but let's just try to appreciate it. Lord Brahma is the most exalted personality in the universe because of his causeless devotional service unto the Lord in mature transcendental knowledge. He therefore created all the 14 planetary divisions for inhabitation by the different types of living entities. So Maitreya continues, He says, eternal time is the primeval source of the interactions of the three modes of material nature. And now he's going to start getting into different types of creations. So he says, of the nine creations, their first one is the creation of the Mahatattva. Okay, so we'll go a little bit past this. So Brahma creates the Mahatattva. In the second, the false ego is generated, in which the material ingredients, material knowledge, and material activities arise. Then, sense perceptions are created in the third creation. And from these, the elements are generated. The fourth creation is the creation of knowledge and of working capacity. The fifth creation is that of the controlling deities by the interaction of the modes of goodness. The sixth creation is the ignorant darkness of the living entity by which the master acts as a fool. So we should understand that actually Krishna is supplying everything. Krishna is supplying all these ingredients. It's Krishna's plan. But Lord Brahma is acting as the engineer. He's doing this as a service. So the seventh creation is the immovable entities, which are of six kinds. The fruit trees without flowers, trees and plants which exist until the fruit is ripe, creepers, pipe plants, creepers which have no support, and trees with flowers and fruits. So that was the seventh creation. The eighth creation is that of the lower species, and they are different varieties, numbering 28. They are all extensively foolish and ignorant. They know their desirables by smell, but are unable to remember anything within the heart. They know their desirables by smell. So these are like insects and germs and so on and so forth. Then he says, of the lower animals, the cow, goat, buffalo, the stag, hog, gavaya animal, not sure what that is, the deer, the lamb, and camel all have cloven hooves. The horse, mule, ass, shatabha bison, and wild cow all have only one hoof. Now you may hear from me about the animals who have five nails. Is everyone following so far? Or is, did anybody think it's boring? This is the Bhagavatam. It's the 10th chapter of the third canto. Okay, this is what I'm explaining here, or what I'm reading. I'm not explaining it. Maitreya is explaining it. I'm reading it. Is this is how Lord Brahma is creating the universe. He's creating the different life forms of the universe. So it starts off with the Mahatattva, which I'm not really too sure what that even means, but he somehow creates the Mahatattva, creates the modes of material nature, and then it's explaining how he's creating the different life forms, which for us may be a little bit more appreciable because we can picture it in our mind. He creates the living entities that cannot see. They are acting through smell. And then he creates the lower species of life, the lower animals. Oh no, first of all, he creates the immovable entities, the different types of trees and plants and so on and so forth. And so that's what's going on right now. So we'll continue. This is what Lord Brahma created. The dog, the jackal, the tiger, the fox, the cat, rabbit, lion, monkey, elephant, tortoise, alligator, etc. all have five nails in their claws. They are known as panchanakas, or animals having five nails. The heron, vulture, this is in succession of what he created. So next he creates the heron, the vulture, the crane, the hawk, the peacock, swan, crow, owl, and all other types of birds. Then the creation of the human being, who are of one species only, and who stock their eatables in the belly, is the ninth in the rotation. In the human race, the mode of passion is very prominent. Humans are always busy in the midst of miserable life, but they think themselves happy in all respects. Okay. And then in the tenth creation, the Kumaras come. And the creation of the demigods is of the eighth creation. the demigods, the forefathers, the asuras or demons, the gandharvas, the apsaras, angels, the yakshas, rakshasas, siddhas, charnas, vidyadharas, bhutas, pretas, pishachas, superhuman beings, celestial singers. And in case we don't know what these words are, Prabhupada gives the synonyms, the definition of these different types of words. So the asura, okay, we have the demons. The gandharvas are expert artisans in the higher planetary systems. The siddhas are persons who are perfect in mystic powers. The rakshasas, he actually defines them here as giants. Rakshasas are giants. Charnas are celestial singers. Bhuta are jinn. Right? It's like a ghost-like creature. Preta, evil spirits. Pishachas, something similar, attendant spirits. Vidyadharas, these are the celestial denizens. And Kinnaras are superhuman beings. Okay? And so that's basically the end of the chapter. And then the last verse, Maitreya says that now I shall explain the descendants of Manu. The creator Brahma is the incarnation of the passion mode of the personality Godhead, creates the universal affairs with unfailing desires in every millennium by the force of the Lord's energy. So then it goes on to the next chapter where we will hear the descendants of Manu. So, is everybody enjoying the class? Yes, Prabhupada. That's text 27. O good Vidura, these last three creations and the creation of demigods, the tenth creation, are Vaikrita creations. Not sure what that means. Let's look up this definition. Vaikrita, Prabhupada defines it as creations of Brahma. Okay. Vaikrita creations, which are different from the previously described Prakrita, or natural creations. The appearance of the Kumaras is both. Okay, maybe I explained it incorrectly. I'm not too sure. I'm so sorry. But, okay. So, I'll try to explain to the best of my ability. So, I'll read the translation again today. The greatly learned sage Maitreya said, O Vidura, Brahma thus engaged himself in penances for 100 celestial years as advised by the personality of Godhead and implied himself in devotional service to the Lord. So, we should understand that Krishna actually does not need our service. It's not by performing activities alone that we can please Krishna. We read, Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, Bhakti Mam Abhijananti, Yavin Yash Chasmin Tattvataha, Tato Mam Tattvato Gyatva Vishite Taranantaram. Only by devotional service, only by bhakti, can one please the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So it's not just by external activities. It's the main ingredient is the devotion or the desire to please Krishna that actually is what Krishna accepts. So Lord Brahma, in this particular universe, at this particular time, happens to be a pure devotee. Not every Brahma in each universe is necessarily a pure devotee. Actually, in the ninth canto, Srila Prabhupada explains in a purport that when the living entity falls from the spiritual world, his first birth is Lord Brahma. So that is just logical proof that not every Brahma is a pure devotee, because if every Brahma was a pure devotee, none of us would be here right now. Once we came here and we were Brahma, then we would have just gone back to the spiritual world. But we actually come here to enjoy, so therefore now we come into less exalted life forms. But this Brahma in this universe happens to be a pure devotee. As we know, he comes as Haridas Thakur, the Namacharya, pure devotee of Lord Chaitanya. But Lord Brahma in general is serving in the capacity of universal creation. And even, you know, you'll hear the Christians say that, oh, it's not by works alone that you attain heaven. But it's also not just by devotion. You don't, it's not that you just sit there and you don't do anything, but actually it's devotional service. There's the devotion and the service. Those both have to be there. Otherwise, if you just have devotion, you could become like a sahajiya. And if you just do work, you could just basically become a materialist or a karmi. Srila Prabhupada explained in the Srimad Bhagavatam class yesterday, he gave the example that we have to act on the platform of Brahman. It's not that you just become Brahman realized and that's perfection. He gave the example of a rich man. It's not that a rich man is just satisfied looking at his money all day, but he will actually, when he uses his riches for enjoyment, then he actually enjoys his riches. So in the same way, someone who's Brahman realized, but there's no activity on the platform of Brahman, then that is not sufficient to fully satisfy the self. So we have to act in this Brahman realization. And this is what Lord Brahma is doing here. It's not that he's just meditating on the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He meditated to perform penance, but once he performed sufficient penance, then he actually did something. He did service. He performed activity. And Krishna supplies, actually, this is all Krishna's arrangement. All these life forms that we read, it's not that Lord Brahma created them, made them up in his imagination, but the outline or the blueprint was already there. And Lord Brahma is simply performing that service. It's just like if someone hired a contractor to come build, you know, some building or some house. You know, it's my idea, for example, it's my idea to build this house, and maybe I want it a specific way. So I give the contractor, the people that actually build it, the blueprint, what I want done, what materials I want the house to be built with, and so they build it. So it's not actually their doing, it's not their idea, it was my idea, but they assembled the ingredients together. Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, Bhumir apo nalavayu kamano bada evacha ahankara iti yame bina prakriti ashtada. Earth, water, fire, air, ether, mind, intelligence, and false ego. These are Krishna's separated material energies. Then he says, apareya mitas tvanyam prakriti virime param jiva bhutam mahabaho gigedam darite jagat. Besides these, there's also something superior, which is the living entity. And the living entity is exploiting the resources of material nature. So the only reason why matter moves in the first place is because the living entity is moving matter. Matter itself is just dead matter. It wouldn't do anything. Like I'm moving my hands right now. It's because I am in this body. If I, the soul, the living entity, wasn't in this body would just be a lump of matter and nothing would move. So the living entities, Krishna impregnates the living entities within these different life forms, and these different life forms move about. Another example, just any car outside, it's basically a useless piece of metal if it's just sitting there and if there's no living entity within it. It just takes up space. But once the living entity is in it and the engine is going, then it is useful. So similarly, anything in this creation is valueless if the living entities are not utilizing them. And Krishna himself is actually the nucleus, the source, the heart, the soul of the universe. Vishnu is compared to the sun, and he's enlightening the universe, and everything is moving according to his will. And Krishna actually says that although we're in the material world, this is divine. Daivihesha gunamaya mama maya duratiya mame vaye prabhanyante mayam itam turantite. He says, Daivihesha gunamaya. Says it's daivi, it's divine. Although it's made up of the three modes of material nature, and we hear that modes of nature are contaminated, we should understand that we should not succumb to the Mayavad philosophy where they say, Brahma Satya Jagan Mitya, that only Brahman is truth and Jagan Mithya, the Jagat, the universe, is false, is Mithya. No, we understand that this universe is real, but it's Krishna's creation. And because it's Krishna's creation, therefore it's divine. So therefore we should use everything, including this body, and if whatever capacity we can, whatever modes of material nature that we're conditioned by, we should utilize anything and everything in Krishna's service, and that will raise us to a higher mode of material nature, namely the mode of goodness. And eventually we also want to transcend that and come to the platform of Shuddhasattva. Tribir guna mayer bhavir abhi sarvam idam jagat mohitam nabijananti mam ebhya paramabhyayam, that deluded by the three modes of material nature, goodness, passion, and ignorance, the living entities do not know me, Krishna speaking. They do not know Krishna. Krishna is above the modes and he's inexhaustible. Just like if you were underwater and there is somebody outside, let's say you're in a pool, there is somebody outside standing near the water. If you're at the bottom of the water and you look up, you may not even see that person, or at very best, it's a very blurry form. It's because you're under the water. But once you come out of the water, then you can actually see that person. So similarly, because we're covered by the modes of nature, we do not have... First of all, some people are completely atheists. They don't see God at all. Or they may have some sort of pseudo-bogus religion. You know, Srimad Bhagavatam kicks out all, second verse, Dharma, samstupanarthaya. Yeah, Dharma, prochitakaitava. It kicks out all, cheating religion, cheating Dharma. So, even people who may be following a so-called religion, they may have a blurry understanding of God, just like that person underneath the water may have a blurry form of the person standing outside. But the Srimad Bhagavatam, the Bhagavad Gita, the words of Krishna, are bringing us out of the modes of material nature to see the Supreme Personality of Godhead clearly. And this happens naturally and spontaneously by chanting the holy names and by reading Srimad Bhagavatam every day. Nashta prayeshu vadreshu nityam bhagavata sevaya. Nitya doesn't necessarily mean every single second for the rest of eternity. It's also explained that nitya also can mean consistently, on a daily basis, every single day. So, like I was explaining, we should not misunderstand that it's by works alone that I do this labor, this external service, but we should understand the goal, which is to love Krishna, to please the spiritual master, and that's actually the bhakti behind it. Lord Brahma obviously is a very exalted soul. He is the first person in this universe, and we are in one sense, well, not in one sense, we are all descendants of Lord Brahma. So every single person you see, every soul inhabiting any form, whether a dog, a tree, a bug, anything, what to speak of us as humans, as also as practicing devotees, we're actually all one family. You know, this is a cliche thing, all the hippies say it, and New Age people say it, but it's actually true. Because we are all descendants of Lord Brahma. We're coming from Lord Brahma, and in a higher sense, we are all parts and parcels of Krishna. Lord Brahma being the first person in the universe, we understand that we're obviously not in Brahma's position. We're human beings on earth. So we cannot imitate Lord Brahma's service. We can't create the universe right now. But we can follow in his footsteps. And Lord Brahma performed penances for 100 celestial years to perform this particular service. But our penance, given to us by our previous acharyas and A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada, is to follow the four regulative principles strictly, chant 16 rounds every single day. This is our penance, to come to the morning program, to read Srila Prabhupada's books, and that is the basics for everyone. For anybody in ISKCON, you have to at least, if you're following strictly, you should be doing these activities, or at least if you're struggling to perform these activities, you should know that this is the standard and work your way to get there. 4 regulative principles, 16 rounds. And if you're living far away from the temple, you can reach the Prabhupada's books every day. You can also have a morning program in your house. This is what keeps us immune from the modes of material nature. And any service after that is like icing on the cake, you know. But obviously we want to expand the movement. We want to preserve the International Society for Krishna Consciousness, but purity is the force. So if we don't have these basic things, then we're not standing on the platform of purity. So any service that we do perform is not going to hold the potency, and it may not last either. Prabhupada in this purport, this last sentence, there is no retirement from such service, which is eternal and ever encouraging. So our constitutional position as living entities is to serve. So even conditioned living souls in this material world, vikarmis living outside, just performing materialistic activities, they also have not retired from the service of the Lord. They're also servants of Krishna. How's it go? Anyways, I forgot the verse. But the living entity is by nature an eternal servant of Krishna. So even when we come to this material world and we are trying to exploit the resources of material energy, we are actually also serving Krishna. We're just serving Krishna indirectly. We're serving his external energy. We're serving his Maya energy. So that's basically our only choices. We can either serve Krishna directly. Directly means through the parampara, through the disciplic succession, or we can serve Maya. But Maya is also a servant of Krishna. So even if you serve Maya, you're also indirectly serving Krishna. So there's no retirement. Eternally, we're serving Krishna. Even if you want to become a Buddhist monk and become void, there's nowhere in existence that is not Krishna's energy. So you may fall asleep for millions of lifetimes, just like as the living entities are absorbed in the body of Vishnu. It's like they're in deep sleep. There's no dreaming, there's no activity. It's basically becoming void, but it's not eternal. You don't become eternally void. You're a living entity eternally, which means you have activity. So eventually you'll come out and perform activity in some body. But also that so-called voidness is also Krishna's energy. So you're also, in that sense, serving Krishna. So there's no way to get around it. You're either going to serve Maya and get punished and kicked in the face repeatedly by Maya, by the material energy, and slapped around and spit on and beat up severely, and be eventually learn your lesson after millions of years of getting kicked in the face, eventually learn your lesson that, okay, something's not working. So the living entity realizes, okay, this place is not a very happy place. Living entities are suffering like anything. People are getting, I don't want to say it in the temple, but, horrific activities, murdered in crazy ways, decapitated. You name it. That's what happens in this world. Little kids get abused by... It's a horrible place, basically. And the idea is we want to enjoy this material world, so we think of all the good things. We think of the nice girlfriend and the Disneyland and nature and the great things that we enjoyed in high school. Okay, we think of all those things. That's only one side of the same coin that if you just flip the coin over, rape, murder, war, poverty, suffering, it's the same coin, it's just two different sides of the same coin. And you can't have one without the other. You want to enjoy Disneyland, next life you get your head cut off. So, I'm sorry. But that's the reality of the situation. So this is actually Maya's arrangement to wake us up, to slap us and wake us up, that we're actually not supposed to be here. So then the living entity wants to become spiritual. And from that platform, not wanting to enjoy, you don't want to enjoy the material world, but if you don't have any positive understanding of the spiritual world, then you come to impersonalism. And those are the Maya bodies or the Buddhists, this material world is false or this material world is miserable, so let's just leave it all together. But actually this doesn't work either. This is another material conception that I don't want to suffer, so let me leave suffering. But the real spiritual perspective is, okay, suffering is there, material happiness is there, I'm leaving the material world altogether. Why? To please Krishna. Krishna is the source of this material world. Even if he wants to keep me here, to serve him, that's also the spiritual world. It's not that we have to go to Vaikuntha or Goloka. We're already right here. You know, we're here right now, New Dwarka. This is the spiritual world. So this service is eternal and it's ever encouraging if we're chanting our rounds nicely, or at least we're trying to, performing service. It's very encouraging. Krishna's in your heart. You're never alone. You're actually never alone. There's not a moment to be lonely. And I had this instance the other day. I was kind of laying down because my body was tired. And for some reason, I was feeling a little bit lonely. And then I was thinking, why am I feeling lonely? And then I had this realization that actually, there is no such thing as loneliness. It's an illusion. Because Krishna's in my heart. And that actually brought me a lot of comfort. It's like we're always be hanging out with Krishna. And serving the Vaishnavas is a glorious opportunity. Is there any questions or comments? Yes, Bhrigupati Prabhu. Yes. Do you want to say?
Thank you for a very enlightening class. I like that point you're making about there's the devotion and the service. And I think that's the way Prabhupada kind of wanted us to understand it. Like, you know, Prabhupada didn't want us to just be devotional. Like, for instance, that famous purport in the 10th canto, 2nd chapter, where he talks about, kriyashu, by manual labor. You're supposed to, you know, go out and distribute the books. And that's like a way of manifesting your devotion. So Prabhupada kind of gave us that concept, that idea that you manifest your devotion by activities. Okay. But what about Prahlad Maharaj? He is the devotee who's famous for the process of devotional service called Smarana. So what's he doing? I mean, he's just remembering. Well, Prahlad Maharaj. So how do we understand that? Is that just something, you know, I mean, not to discredit your idea, but is that just something for us? Or what's the proper understanding? Because Prahlad Maharaj is just remembering. He's not doing any activity. He's just remembering. So, and that's considered devotional service.
One I would say that's an activity. That's an activity of the intelligence and the mind. Yeah. There's a, how's it go? Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu, Smaranam, Parasevanam, Archanam, Dasim, Sakyam, Atman.
You don't necessarily have to engage in some physical activity. It could be.
Yeah, I think this is also like some devotees have this misconception that devotional service means I'm physically moving my body. I'm cutting the vegetables or I'm, you know, making Rati Achakars. Yes, all this could be devotional service, but that's not the limit of devotional service. Devotional service is also in the mind. You can be meditating on Krishna, chanting his holy names. That's considered the best service. That almost, this, materially speaking, that seems like you're not really doing much. You're sitting there chanting japa. Devotional service is reading. You know, what is that really accomplishing? But it's actually accomplishing a lot. It's pleasing Krishna, and it's purifying your heart. So Prahlad Maharaj is performing service. So let me think about this for a second, because
what would be the example of, like, this, what would be the example of the devotion without the service.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, let me think about it. He was saying, what's an example of having devotion without the service? Because I said that you have to have both. You can't just have devotion and you sit there and do nothing. But you also can't just do service without devotion. So I did say that. I'll take responsibility for saying that. So now I have to give you an example. The burden of proof is on me because I said it. So, Nikatma wants to say something. As he's saying something, I'm going to try to think of something to say.
As you pointed out, devotional service is transcendental in every, and there's different processes or different ways to perform devotional service. Prahlad did many things, not just remembering. As a small child, 5-year-old, he was preaching quite vigorously. And by his activities, he was chanting also, and even to his father. So it's not just remembering, but when you're inspired in devotional service, you engage it in so many different ways. And again, as you pointed out, it's all transcendental, whether it's remembering, whether it's chanting, whether it's serving the lotus feet, or whether it's offering some prasadam, whether it's remembering. All these things are, they're active. They're not static.
They're ecstatic. They're not static. I did think of one thing, actually. Prabhupada gives this example that, you know, if a husband tells his wife, I love you, you know, he could tell her that every day, but he never does anything for her to show her that he actually loves her, then, like, where's the proof of the love? It's just words. And the idea that I was thinking about was, like, you know, when you meet Christians, and they basically, oh, you just believe in Jesus, and then you're saved. You don't have to follow any regular principles. There's no sadhana. There's not even a concept of service. You just have faith. So where is the proof of your love for Jesus or your devotion for God? It's just sound coming out of your mouth. Yeah, it's sentiment.
It's not common. As you pointed out, and Prabhupada also points out in the purport of no retirement, it's just like a parent who has a child. There's no question of retirement. You have to do that every single day. You're meditating on how to get that child up, how to address them, how to feed them, how to protect them, how to engage them. So devotional service is just like that. We're constantly thinking, how can I engage in some way, whether it's mental, whether it's physical, whether it's by words, whether it's by offering something or engaging someone else, that is also devotional service. There's no retirement.
Thank you, Nakadma. That was exactly on my mind. I just wanted to extend it a little bit more. Krishna says that whatever you do, whatever you eat, whatever you offer or give away, whatever austerities you perform, do this as an offering unto me. In this way you will be freed from the bondage of work and its auspicious and inauspicious results. So Krishna says, whatever you do, whatever you eat, whatever, that is devotional service. Whatever Krishna requests, which is positive, that's devotional service, because Krishna is non-different from devotional service. Devotional service is not just service. It's service which gives pleasure to the Supreme Lord and is something that the Supreme Lord would like and is happy to receive.
Hi. I think Abhay, he keeps raising his hand.
Thank you for the nice class. Oh, Ananda Kirtan. I just wanted to say, Maya is like the father. I mean, Krishna is like the father. Krishna's trying to test you. So it's not like, okay, like 2 + 3 = 5, that's it, that's all I know. It's not like that. You have to like concentrate so much. You have to practice until when you leave your body, you have to go back to Godhead.
Sachi Chanoi Pura Haripo.
Yeah, thank you for a wonderful class, and all the questions are fantastic. It appears that, you know, when one comes on to Krishna consciousness, they appreciate what we're doing. Then Prabhupada says the next thing is that you want sadhu sangha, association. And if you associate with devotees, then the next thing is bhajana kriya. You do something. Like, for instance, just people that come to the temple now, that they once you start associating with devotees, then they say, well, I got to do something for Krishna. So then after you do something for Krishna, you're not an avriti. You actually become purified. And that purification can lead you up to where you can chant 24 hours a day. But that's a very elevated state. Very few devotees are like Haridas Thakur. You know, we need to do something with ourselves, with our body, our minds, and with our words. And Krishna conscious devotional service is the epitome of that activity. So staying in association with devotees is essential in order to maintain any kind of spiritual platform. Otherwise, it's almost impossible. Like Prabhupada said, no matter how difficult it may be, one should never leave the association of devotees. Because once you do that, then Prabhupada actually said, you'll fall down again. This is a verse, so this is our platform, more or less.
The comment that Abhay made about Maya trying to test us, right? So then there is a question that I have that it challenges actually my faith when I come across with this. You just mentioned that the first, I say, we living beings, we were Brahmas, right? Lord Brahma. And then I thought, oh my God, Brahma, me? Really? Then I thought, well, what about someone like Hitler, Mussolini, and then all the persons who throw bombs, Hiroshima, Nagasaki, and millions of people, you know, got affected. I mean, if you count Hitler's action. So it's a challenge, actually. I've been tested. Sometimes I go like, but I want to also say that I think one devotee asked that question to Prabhupada. Do you remember that? Hari, sorry. Yeah. So we do come with a lot of challenges. And can you say something about this?
Well, I answered the question. You know, when Hari started presenting that to Prabhupada, Prabhupada threw it right back at him. He just put it right back on his plate. You think that's impossible for Krishna? There's different times when Prabhupada just kind of responded by going, come on, you just have to have some faith. You know, Krishna's inconceivable. Is God going to be conceivable or inconceivable? Okay, so if he's inconceivable, it's inconceivable with details. That's one of the details. That he could expand to 16,108 forms, that's another detail. That he could lift Govardhan Hill with the pinky of his left hand, that's another detail. You have to accept those things. It's like an axiomatic truth. You know, there's certain things. God's inconceivable, so he has inconceivable activities. And Jiva Goswami says, unless you accept Achincha Shakti, which is that there's no question of going any further. So it's like just like a math. You know, there's certain axioms, axiomatic things you have to accept in order to go further. I think it's like that. At least intellectually. At least intellectually, we have to accept that, yeah, that's possible. And then engage in the process, as Suvas was saying, Prabhu was saying. And as we engage in the process with further purification, hopefully realization will develop. At least initially, we have to theoretically accept that, yeah, okay, that's what this philosophy is saying, I accept it. And in the meantime, let me engage in the process. And then as I get purified and make further advancement, it'll be revealed to me how these things are true. At the moment, it's hard for me to understand it, but if I just keep going, it'll be revealed to me in due course of time how these things all are true. That's my understanding. That's what I work on.